Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. And yes, indeed, let's get started again. We are going into part two tonight of the Sherry Brake interview. And if you didn't think that part one didn't intrigue you enough, well, hopefully this one and part three will. But before we get into that interview, I am going to share with you, as promised, yet another haunted report story. So sit back, grab someone next to you, and as they say, let's get started. Roll that footage.
Did I hear somebody come in?
Welcome to the Haunted Report! Alrighty then, so I have another story to share with you tonight, a true story, and also a story that hits right below the belt, because I can identify with that story a lot. Okay, when we get to part three of the Sherry Brake interview, I am going to give you yet another story, which you will find even more fascinating, as well as some interesting news that's coming up. All right, here we go. So when I was at the Haunted America Conference, I had the honor and privilege of meeting all sorts of people. And it was always really fun to talk to them about their personal stories regarding paranormal, extraterrestrial, multidimensional, cryptid, whatever the case may be. And so I was talking with this gentleman about, I asked him if he ever had any kind of a haunting or something very unusual that happened with him that he didn't mind talking about and sharing. And so he told me about a time when he and his wife were obviously sleeping in bed, and the next morning when they woke up, they found themselves without clothes on, turned around in the opposite direction. Essentially, their clothes were folded nicely. Her clothes were folded and put on his side of the bed, at some location. I can't remember if it was at the bottom where his feet were or not. And his clothes were folded and put on her side of the bed. And so what makes this story quite intriguing is that you hear of a number of abduction accounts, extraterrestrial abduction accounts, where people do get abducted, and then all of a sudden they wake up finding their circumstances to be a little bit bizarre. Now, there are a number of times when I have been in the same situation. There was a time when I was in my 20s that I believe I sleptwalked that night. I mean, that's what I believe. But when I woke up the next morning, I had my prom dress on. It was backwards and it was zipped up, and I have absolutely no idea how on earth I managed to put that dress on during the evening time and it being zipped up. That was probably the confusing part for me. When I had woke up and discovered that, I thought to myself, you know, I better lay off the sauce. No, it was not a prom night. No, I didn't have any gentleman caller over. I was by myself, and basically, in a nutshell, whatever it was, I did recall that the room during the winter time was rather cold. I did sleep in a heated waterbed. For those of you who remember the days of the waterbed, that kept me nice and warm in a rental room that was always freezing cold. And it's very likely that if I sleptwalked that night, I probably thought I was freezing or was going to freeze and needed to put on some extra clothes. But it was when I discovered that the dress was zipped up in the back. Now, keep in mind, this is a long dress, zipped up all the way to the top in the back, and it was completely turned around on me, where the back was, let me think about this here a minute. I guess the back was in the front, and the front was in the back. Yep. So I guess it's possible to zip up your dress in the opposite fashion, but how uncomfortable, but to wear a dress backwards. So when this gentleman was telling me about his story, I thought to myself, that sounds awfully familiar, because I've had a couple situations where my husband and I, for example, would wake up and we would discover the pillowcases, one being completely off his pillow. And I'm going to tell you right now, his head does not move an inch when during the middle of the night. I can tell you that for certain. I can also tell you that that night that his pillowcase, the next day when we discovered this, was puddled between us. And then that was one time, and I have that in one of my earlier books, that story. And then there was a time here in my house where, when I was going through this series of what I consider blood cleansings or cleanings, I did wake up. I was naked, yes, and my clothes were puddled down at the end of the bed on a chair across from the bed. And no, I don't recall sleepwalking. I don't recall any of that during the night. I do recall feeling a little different, like I did when I was in the Las Vegas hotel room and woke up feeling very unusual after that haunted experience that night. So, you know, these things go through your mind and you wonder, how the heck did that happen? Or, you know, this is very bizarre. Things are puddled between you. Pillowcases are removed. You're waking up naked, you know. And then there was the time, of course, when, and I was talking with someone, I think a recent guest on the show, who he and I were talking about, you know, the possibility of, I was kicked up into the air in this one room in near Yosemite National Park, I would say about a good foot to nearly 2 feet. And then I woke up bouncing on the bed. And but what's interesting about that is I still swear I felt the foot of that angry miner that was proclaimed to be under the bed, didn't like people who snored, rattled the bed, shook the bed, you know, the whole 10 yards. And then I'm waking up bouncing on the bed. Well, there is the possibility that if this was any type of a attempted abduction at all, because it seemed like things were always happening to me, the gentleman and I, when we were talking about this, there's a possibility that I was just simply dropped. And dropped because I didn't get through the ceiling of the building, dropped because they couldn't lift me because I was quite a heavy gal. There's all kinds of reasons why you could possibly be dropped. Now, you're going to ask, what did my husband do? Well, and most of you will be able to relate to this. When cases happen like this and you are completely startled by something, you will find that the person that you're sleeping next to is still sleeping soundly. You can't wake them up. You try to shake them to wake up. They won't wake up. They lay there. This is exactly what happened with him that night. I said, my God, how could you not feel that? I mean, I was bouncing on the bed. And it's like, what? Okay, so that's what I'm saying. It's very interesting how this is a numerous time that I have experienced my husband being in a trance or a position where he is completely not there, out of it, when something is happening to me. Anyway, I thought you would enjoy that. I thought this is great because now somebody else is woken up and has had the experience of being naked and having their clothes folded or puddled down by their feet or whatever. But what I find fascinating about his story is that when they folded their clothes really nicely, her clothes went next to his feet and his clothes went right next to her feet. And I guess, as they say, they don't necessarily have to be fashion conscious now, do they? So here ends the haunted report, and stay tuned as we're now going into part two of the Sherry Brake interview.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Mm-hmm. You know, the first, and you would think, being in the field and investigating, you know, I'll be 60 next year. So my first investigation was 2021, something like that. And I never saw a full-fledged apparition until I moved to West Virginia. 2009. Yeah. I saw him in my house. Mm-hmm. And I've seen shadow people, you know, sure, shadow people, weird images and, you know, on photographs and things like that. You know, the movements out of the corner of your eye and you turn and there's nobody there.
Yeah,
I had that happen plenty of times, but the full-fledged apparition appeared immediately in front of me at night at the foot of my bed.
Now, I want to talk about that. Hold that thought for just a smidge. Just hold it, because I want to talk about that and beat it down a little bit. So I have not yet. Yes, I have. I've seen half of a face that I matched to a maid over in Wales that's also in my book.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about that too. But because I'm going to ask you if you've ever had this experience and that experience, and I bet you probably have. By the way, you and I are the same age. So, actually, you and I think, are 2 days apart. That's what I'm thinking at this point. We had a conversation before the show. And yes. We won't tell anyone what year we were born, but I'll ask you afterwards. I have a feeling you and I are only 2 days apart. But anyway, so this, the apparition part, yeah, that's the one I was looking for when I was wishing for it, right? But then there was also a part of me that said, I don't know if I can handle seeing a full-fledged apparition, because it might scare me so much and traumatize me that I don't know if I could be able to stomach it. So maybe the universe was responding in a different way and showing these images to me in a screened window, but they were looking right at me. And if you know anyone who will ever see this picture, yes, you will say, holy cow. And it's like, yes, holy cow. But now I want to go back to you, because this happened to me in 2007. So sometimes I like to match up the years of when things are actually showing themselves more, like, for example, if there's anything environmentally that's happening out there that causes the gamma rays or anything to be stronger than what they normally would be, which helps to light up the stuff better. But yes. 2007 is when I captured, but it sounds like you saw your first full body then in 2009.
2009, it was May.
Okay. All right. Oh, June. Oh, no, no. It was May of 2007, May 6th or 7th when I captured the images of them in the screened window of 2000. That's interesting. What year, what day did you see this?
You know, I'd have to go back and because I wrote it down on the calendar that year. That was a year of big change for me.
I know.
Moved from Ohio to West Virginia, got remarried, left the city, moved on to a farm with 300 acres,
yeah,
completely uprooted, moved my business, you know. So it was a traumatic year. There was a lot of change going on there. So there was a lot of that energy.
Yeah.
It was a very emotional year.
Yeah.
And leaving my home and moving here and trying to get acclimated to everything. And then to have that experience, I was laying in bed at night. And first of all, our property, our acreage is large, and we sit on an old mine site, an old coal mining site.
Okay.
So there was a strip job here that started in the 1940s and underground mines as well. Mm-hmm. And these mines worked up until the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there were 8 documented deaths that happened mm-hmm. here in the coal mines. So there were roof collisions.
Yep.
There were explosions that happened, mm-hmm. and there was also somebody that died from a heart attack. Okay. So we have all these documented deaths. And of course, my husband had told me, you know, this was a coal mine, and I knew that because they were still wrapping up their mining at the time. But he didn't tell me that somebody had died right where our house.
Oh,
is
God. No
kidding. He didn't tell me that, right? So he left that detail out. So he's asleep, laying in bed next to me. And I'm laying there getting ready to fall asleep, and the room gets icy cold.
Okay.
And I'm laying there under the covers, and I'm like, why am I so cold? And before I could even try to think why, you know, I would be freezing, at the foot of the bed starts this shadow forming. And of course, you just gaze at something like that mm-hmm. when it starts to happen, because you don't sit up, you don't grab anybody. You're trying to figure out what is going on in front.
What time of night was this?
Oh, probably midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. Okay. So in our bedroom, we've got a nightlight on over in the corner. So it's kind of dimly lit, but across from the bed on the opposite wall are 2 large windows okay. with blinds, and there's security lights outside. Cause this is a farm. We've got a lot of security lights outside.
Right.
So there's that glow coming in. So right. the windows are illuminated. So when this shape started forming, it blocked out the light, and it's a man. It goes right up to a man with a hat on, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at him, cause I'm kind of frozen. Like, what am I seeing?
Yeah.
I could see the cheeks. He was real slender and tall. His cheeks were kind of gaunt looking, had the hat, had gray clothing on, mm-hmm. and then he's gone. And I'm at this point hitting my husband next to me, like, wake up. He's like, what's wrong? I said, you're not going to believe this, but I saw a ghost. You know, I was like stuttering. There was a man at the foot of the bed, and he calmly looks at me and he said, oh, you saw him. You saw Mr. Thomas.
Oh, geez.
And I'm like, what? Who's
Mr. Thomas? Yeah.
Yeah. He goes, oh, he was a miner here. He's one of the 8 that I told you about. And I'm like, no, no, no. This guy was not a coal miner, because he had a hat on, but he didn't have the little light on his hat. And my husband said, oh, no, he didn't work below ground. He worked above ground. He wouldn't have had a lamp. He wouldn't have had a light on his hat.
Interesting.
And I was like, what happened to Mr. Thomas? He said, well, he died right here where our house is sitting. I'm like, what? You never told me. He goes, it never really came up in conversation.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah,
it's not like you don't know what I do for a living.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't want to tell you. I didn't want to tell you because I wanted to see you know, if something would happen. And I'm like, well, how did Mr. Thomas die? Of course, I'm fully, you know, I'm like, I want to hear the story. Yeah. And he said, well, he said, this was a coal mine site. He said, so they had the underground mines and they had the strip job where they would pull the coal off of the top layer, you know, right underneath the dirt. And he said, we had several railroad lines, several railroad tracks that came into the property. Mm. And Mr. Thomas worked above ground and his job was loading the coal into the coal cars and he would couple them. Right. He would connect the train cars together. Mm. Right. And he was trying to connect it and they slipped and he was standing right there too close and it pinned him. And he basically had enough time to like light a cigarette and talk to his friends before they pulled the cars apart because they knew that he would die. And he said he died right here.
Oh God.
And I'm like, that is really interesting. So I never saw him again, but my son was, he would have been about 17 years old. He was a junior in high school.
Okay.
He had a young girl over and they were in the TV area. They're watching TV one night and there was a window that looked out to the back of the property. Mm-hmm. And she looked over at my son, Mason, and she said, what's the deal with the guy over there?
Oh, God.
So my son's thinking, let's grab a gun. There's a trespasser or, you know, whatever. Right. And she goes, no, it's a spirit. It's a ghost. She said, I can see them every once in a while. And he's just kind of like looking at me and then he just walked away.
Huh.
And I'm like, I bet that was Mr. Thomas because he seems to come around whenever there is a new female visitor in the home. I don't know if he was a ladies' man or if he's just curious, but so that's my first time full apparition.
I have a question on that.
Right.
I have a question. So when she saw this gentleman, was she able to describe him the exact same way? Was he wearing the same hat, the gray? Kind
tall
of
guy. Yeah, tall guy in work clothes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know what the deal is. I think he just wanted to be acknowledged or was curious about the female energy that was here. But to this day, my son lives in that house now. We live on the farm. He lives with us, but in a separate
house.
So he lives in our old house. Right. And on occasion, lights will go on and off and the smoke detectors will go off and then they'll, you know, I'm like, well, maybe it's just electrical. He's like, Mom, really?
Yeah.
This house. I mean, you know, he's been seen several times by three females. There was another one that had seen him standing in the kitchen at night. So I don't know what's going on, but I find it really interesting because with a mine site and the disasters that happen, you know, I think you get tied to the property. I think I think that they're trapped. But maybe they haven't finished that job. Maybe they feel like they still need to be here working. So it's a curious place. This property here has a lot of energy to it.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about my as you're talking about being tied to a location, I'm thinking about my great-grandfather and how he built that house with his own hands and, you know, and how he came back for a visit. Now, it wasn't just that only time. There have been other hauntings on that property that may or may not have been him at some point in time. But when there's an investment of energy or a sudden death like that, sometimes they just don't, I don't know. When people say, yeah, we'll try to pass them over and all that sort of thing, I did mention on a show the other night that sometimes they just come back. You know, sometimes they just don't want to leave or they are confused about leaving or whatever. So it just all depends. Maybe he just likes it there. It's hard to say. He hasn't done anything from the way it sounds to disrupt like throw things off the wall or cause things to be permanently broken or anything like that. It sounds to me like he, I don't know, for all we know, he's probably just did he seem intelligent to you?
He did because it was as if he was gazing right at me.
Yeah.
When I saw him. It was like he acknowledged that I was there. I mean, there was eye contact, even though it was dimly lit.
Yeah.
The gaze is in that it froze me. I mean, you hear about like old hag syndrome or sleep paralysis or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I could move. Mm-hmm. It's just, I was trying to investigate and document and get every detail that I could in those 15 seconds of actually seeing him. And he does have family in this area, in this valley where I
live. Oh, he does.
Yeah. So there, I mean, a lot of people here, you move here, or the immigrants, you know, from the 1800s, the 19th century that came here, they stayed here. These families in these hollers on these properties down here, these farms, these families all stay, and they're clannish in a way. But when you stay and you pay off a property and you farm and you have the ties to that property,
right,
it's only natural to pass it down to, you know, one of the children. Somebody's going to want it, you know, when you're gone. So you get a lot of family that have been here for a couple hundred years.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And then sometimes there's sadder stories. I'm situation we're in, unfortunately, was sold to a person that lives in the area. But so there are goods and bads about having a property passed down. I do miss ghost hunting or searching on that property. I had numerous experiences there that I talk about even in my own books. But there is that lingering, and West Virginia, from what I know, to me, seems to be, I mean, every place in this world is haunted to some degree. And they have their own energy story that embeds itself, you know, in that area, that space. But I hear of an awful lot happening in West Virginia.
Yes. I know with some of my research, you know, I do a lot online, but I'm a library nut. I love to go hit the research department, microfiche, microfilm, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. The old reference books that were written back in the day, where they have sketches of local pioneers and things, and they talk about the settlers. I love that. And I remember reading one book on the history of West Virginia, and it was interesting because they threw in a little bit of dark history into this book. It was done like in 1890, and it talked about Virginia, Western Virginia, and how no Indian tribe felt at home or would establish a village in what is Western Virginia. And it's because they felt, and it mentioned in this paragraph, it's because that they felt that there was a negative or a dark presence. And I'm like, wow, that is like cutting edge for an 1895 research book to mention that, you know, the Shawnee specifically would come into the area of what is West Virginia now, and they would hunt, they would fish, they would travel on the trails.
Yeah.
They would get their captives, you know, and take them back to Ohio, more than likely to Coshocton or Sandusky or Chillicothe, to the main villages. And I just find it fascinating that they sensed something here and they weren't comfortable with the energy. So they never established any type of a settlement in this area. And then you have, you know, Chief Cornstalk's curse and Mothman and all these great stories. And I don't know, it's a fascinating area to live in. The Appalachian culture, the superstitions, the frontier history. It's really cool. I love it here.
Let's break this down a little bit now that we're on this topic a little bit. I want to break it down. Tell everybody, we were talking before the show, and you've given me like a handful of the different types of phenomena and or sightings and or that you're really surrounded by. Go down that list again and kind of give people a feel as to what you have on every side of you.
Yeah. I'm kind of like in the middle, so I'm loving it here. So I'm in the central part of West Virginia.
Okay.
To the north of me, I would have Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum.
Okay.
So that's the second largest stone cut building in the world, 5 miles of interior hallways. I've written a book on it. It's an amazing, amazing building to experience. So to the north of me, I have Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum.
Wow.
To the northeast of me, I have the West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville, West Virginia. So that is several hours away, but I've written 2 books on that location. So that is a building that is steeped in a lot of dark history, a lot of executions.
Okay.
To the south of me, I have Lake Shawnee Amusement Park.
Okay.
been on multiple television reality shows, ghosts of children that wander around the amusement park that died there, unfortunately. I also have to the south of me the Greenbrier Ghost.
Okay.
And this is actually a true thing that happened. This is Zona Hsu was in her early 20s and married a man by the name of Edward Hsu. And Edward had had a couple of wives prior to Zona. Zona was only about 22 years old when she married him. His other wives died mysteriously at early ages. So when they found Zona dead, a few months after the marriage, of course, tongues started to wag and everybody wondered, you know, is Edward up to some mischief? Yeah. Well, when they found the body of Zona, Edward was there, wouldn't let anybody examine the body of his young bride. So, and this is about, I want to think it's about 1895, 1897. He wouldn't let anybody do an autopsy. He wouldn't let anybody examine the body. He insisted on dressing his bride, washing her body, putting her back in her wedding gown, high-necked collar, and wrapping a beautiful scarf around her throat. So okay. She's buried. 2 weeks later, she appears in a dream to her mother saying, Edward killed me. He broke my neck.
Oh, so interesting.
The mother goes to the local constable and says, I've had this vision. My daughter came to me in a dream. You need to dig up the body of my daughter because she has been murdered by Edward.
Okay.
So they exhume the body. They do the autopsy. They see that she has a broken neck. They're still bruising. She's only been buried for a few weeks. And they convict him of killing his wife.
Wow.
He ends up going to the West Virginia Penitentiary. So this is the only time in the American justice system where actually a ghost testimony submitted into court. So that is to the south of me. To the west of me, you have Mothman.
Oh, yes.
All right, Chief Cornstalk's curse, you know, dying under the surrender flag that he flew in the year of the Bloody Seven, 1777. So you have all that going on to the west of me.
Yeah.
And then directly to the north again, we have the Braxton County Green Monster, or the Flatwoods Green Monster, which was seen in 1952. UFO sighting, cryptid sighting, nobody's really sure what happened, but the National Guard was called into the woods and cordoned off the forest, and big investigation was done, and they say it was just a comet, wink, wink.
Yeah.
But I am in the center of all of that, and then you throw in the Bigfoot sightings.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty rich heritage down here.
Let's talk a little bit about, can you make a description or what this, what did you say, the Flatwoods
Green Monster. Okay. Flatwoods is a tiny town in Braxton County. Okay. So you'll hear it referred to as the Braxton County Green Monster or the Flatwoods Green Monster. Mm-hmm. There's been numerous documentaries on it, also some books that have been written. Mm-hmm. And this was basically, I want to say it was September the 5th of 1952, where a group of children were playing outside with their school teacher. They were at her home, and they saw this large glowing ball of light flying through the sky, and it crashed into a hillside just above the town of Flatwoods. Okay. And of course, this is big news. You know, they tracked it in the sky. It fell. They had no idea what it was. So these kids take off running. They're all grade school. I think there might have been one high schooler with their teacher. Kathleen was her name. And they went up on this hillside, this farm property, and there's a fire and there's all this smoke. And they climb up to where this object had crashed into the hillside. And they see this creature standing. It had green robes and a very pointed hat that was red. And I know I have a doll of it here in my office. Very interesting looking character. And it's towering above this mist. And several of the kids that were there and the teacher, they all become really nauseated.
Yeah.
And they're vomiting, and they turn around and they book out of there.
Yeah.
You know, and they run back downtown and they call the police. They're separated and they all draw the same sketch of what they had seen. Newspaper was contacted. People are flooding into town. The army comes in. I should say the National Guard comes in, and they're like barricading off this area. Nobody can go in because they think it's a comet. But it's interesting because people had seen this same comet or this light fly through the sky in Maryland, across several states. So it's a fascinating phenomenon.
Wow.
So that's the crux of it, the Flatwoods Green Monster.
Interesting.
And they actually have a museum that they did in honor of the Flatwoods Green Monster. And they have had several ceremonies, festivals in honor of this cryptid.
Wow. Interesting.
It's a pretty cool story.
Let me ask you about Mothman for a moment. So how far away are you technically from the point where someone had documented this Mothman in West Virginia? How far away?
Well, actually, the first sighting was not in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. It was in what they believe to be Clay County, which is one county over from me. The day before the official sighting of the four people that had seen Mothman in Point Pleasant, there were some grave diggers in Clendenin, West Virginia, and they were up on a hillside digging a grave like you do down here. A lot of these graves that are dug are on hillsides. They're pretty complex areas to get into with machinery, so they still dig them by hand.
Yeah.
And they saw this big black winged creature at the edge of the cemetery, and he just took off out of a tree and had this gigantic wingspan, and it freaked them out.
Yeah.
And flash forward to the next day when you have the couples that go out into the woods and they're parking in this isolated area just north of Point Pleasant, mm-hmm. and in the evening, and they see Mothman, you know, this big, tall, black winged creature perched up in a tree. And that's the most famous sighting that you hear about. So I'm basically 45 minutes away from the first sighting of Mothman, that unofficial sighting that happened to the gravediggers. And then another hour west would be Point Pleasant, West Virginia. And that's why, right on the Ohio River there. A lot of energy wherever you have these old river towns, you know, and ley lines, I think, factor into some of these sightings. Point Pleasant, you know, is the site of the battle at Point Pleasant. It's also the spot where Chief Cornstalk was murdered under a flag of truce. So you have his curse over the property there at Point Pleasant. And it's just a fascinating area.
How do people react to that? Have you talked with anybody at all that lives pretty much on those perimeters or those in those areas, you know, per se? And how do they feel about, do they keep on the lookout? Do they feel intimidated by something out there? So they're always watching their backs or whatever. How do these people react to actually living in a place that has had these direct sightings?
That's a great question. And I have a history with Point Pleasant because I have done Mothman tours there since 2000 and probably about 2005 was my very first official bus tour where I had a group of people join up with me and we went to Point Pleasant and we did the Mothman Museum and all that. So I researched it a great deal. I talked to a lot of people there in town. And it's kind of like a double-edged sword, Mothman, in that area. You've got it tied to the collapse of the Silver Bridge. And that was, that happened in 1966, December 15th of 1967.
Okay.
First official Mothman sighting was in 66. Collapse of the bridge was exactly 13 months later on December 15th of 1967. So when this Silver Bridge collapsed, some people speculated, number one, it might be the curse of Chief Cornstalk again. Number two, could be something to do with Mothman, because for 13 months prior to that, he'd been seen hundreds of documented sightings in and around Point Pleasant. So with this collapse of the bridge, you have 46 people dying with this massive steel structure dropping into the Ohio River. December, there was Christmas traffic on that bridge because it's the week before Christmas. You have everybody dropping and just being bombarded by this huge steel structure falling in on top of them, and you have 46 people dying. So you have that emotional connection of talking to people in Point Pleasant who lost loved ones and that who vividly remember it, and who might not believe in Mothman, but might feel that that area definitely has a curse on it because of the river flooding, because of the mine disasters in the area, because of the economic status, just a kind of a depressed area. And they do such a good job at trying to promote Mothman because they have the annual festival, you know, every year, the third September or the third weekend in September, they have the annual Mothman Festival. Mm-hmm. Thousands of people come from around the world. So it's good for tourism for the area, but yet you're also, you know, memorializing not just Mothman, but the 46 people that perished, you know, and that bridge collapse. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. They believe, a lot of people believe that Mothman is still being sighted today. I mean, I know that there's some websites out there that claim that he was just seen a few weeks ago, you know, in a different part of the world. But we have to look at not only the history of Mothman since 1966, but even to the fact that hundreds and hundreds of years ago, these black-winged, large flying creatures would be seen, you know, before battles in Scotland, in different cultures, possibly as a thunderbird. It's just fascinating. So it is a double-edged sword there. There's good and there's bad. I've been a speaker at the Mothman Festival for probably 4 or 5 years. So I've seen the thousands of people that come into town. There's people that fly in from Australia, you know, to come in and do that festival. And Jeff Walmsley, he's done a great job at founding the Mothman Museum and the artifacts that he's got in there. It's just, it's amazing. And I actually have a Mothman tour that I'm doing in October. So I'm looking forward to that as well, but fascinating history.
Yeah, I can add to that a little bit. Let's see, where do I want to begin? I'll begin with me. So I was on the Minneapolis Bridge the night before it collapsed, and it was believed that Mothman was seen flying out from underneath that bridge. And what made that experience so eerie is that it was during rush hour and there was nobody on the bridge. And so when I was driving over the bridge, my first thoughts were, what's going on here? This is really creepy. I'm getting a really creepy right now. And I feel creeped out right now. And I feel like I need to get off this bridge. That's all I could think about, because it just, my heart started to beat really badly. And then it was the next day that it collapsed. And so to this day, I don't know who made the report, and I don't know how I learned of it. Actually, I just remember hearing about it, and then talking to like Lon Strickler, who is on my podcast. I don't know if I'll get him yet on the talk show. Maybe he'll come on, but you know, he and I talked pretty candidly about Mothman a little bit, and then also there's going to be a gentleman that'll also be on the show who wrote a book specifically also on Mothman, and he's going to come on. I think he might be coming on after your show airs on the week after. But what's real interesting about this Mothman character is that there seems to be a dilemma about whether or not it shows what just prior to a tragedy, and usually the tragedy is something. Well, when you mentioned the flooding, that makes me a little nervous too, because a few years back, not too long ago, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I interviewed for a position, or I was going to interview for a position in West Virginia. And just very shortly after I left there, a terrible flood came through and basically wiped out one of your communities, or hit it so hard that it still, you know, was feeling the effect of it. And I always joke with my husband and I say, did something just occur there that I was like a blessing in disguise, that I didn't, you know, go forth with this job situation? Or did something actually happen there that I'm not aware of, that, you know, yada, yada, yada. So I don't know about the flooding, but it seems like there's an awful lot of bridge collapses that are associated and tied with Mothman. And I lived down in, you know, Indiana for a while. And of course, I would actually found on the timeline of how many sightings this thing is being seen in Chicago. And so, you know, I just don't know if it's the same thing We don't know if there's multiple Mothmen. We don't know if they look all alike, but they're always described the same way. And so I'm just wondering the connection between West Virginia Mothman, Chicago Mothman, Minneapolis Falling Down Bridge Mothman. You know, it's real fascinating, and it's kind of scary too. But
it is. You know, I do some tours to Scotland and Ireland, and I remember being in Scotland, and we were actually talking about Mothman at one of the pubs, mm-hmm. and one of the locals had mentioned to me. He goes, "Well, you know, it's kind of hard not to notice us because usually it's 30 or 40 Americans,
yeah,
all walking at the same pub all at once, and everybody turns and looks at you, and then they go back to their beer."
Yeah, I know.
Talking with this gentleman, you know, he found out I was from West Virginia. He goes, "Oh, we love to talk to people from West Virginia because you've got the Mothman." And I'm like, "Well, you heard of him?" And he's like, "Yeah, you've got Mothman and you've got Take Me Home Country Roads." And then he started the song, and I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "You know, we've got the same thing. If you look into Scottish history, there are stories and eyewitness accounts before some of these large battles,
mm-hmm.
back during the era of William Wallace and, you know, Braveheart, of these winged creatures flying across the field up above these clans before they clash." And he said it's seen as an omen.
Yeah.
And he goes, "It goes back through all times." And I'm like, "This is fascinating."
Yeah.
I love it. And then you get into people that believe that maybe it's parallel dimensions.
Yeah.
These creatures are in the same with aliens and Bigfoot, even, that they're multi-dimensional, parallel dimensional travelers going back and forth.
Yeah.
Between the dimensions. So it's fascinating.
Have you heard of this story? I presume you might have. I saw it on television a couple of years ago, and I don't know. I'm going to tell the story and tell me if it sounds familiar to you.
Okay.
Something to do with a couple that went searching for Mothman in the woods somewhere, and apparently to a spot where it had been seen before, and they were calling out to it to show itself and to come forth or to make itself known in some way. They could feel an unusual energy about it, and I can't remember. I know they didn't necessarily see it, but they felt some unusual energy, and then I think something scared them out of there, and they went home, but then all of a sudden they started having Mothman appear in their bedroom during various evenings, and it was almost like Mothman now was stalking them and really scaring them and wouldn't leave them alone and was badgering them in some way just with its presence. So they went back out to the same place where they tried to summons Mothman to begin with, and they apologized and they said, "We're very sorry to have disturbed you," or something along that lines. "Please leave us alone. We didn't mean you any harm. We would just like to have more peace in our lives," because this thing was bringing runes to their lives. You know, you can just imagine every bad thing happening after another. Well, I can't remember when I read this or where I saw it, and I don't know if it's, you know, fake or not fake or whatever, or just a good story, but it sounded like even 10 years later, they were still being pestered and bothered by Mothman, where it was essentially bringing them to a point of not necessarily suicide, but considering it just to try to rid the thing from their life. Did you ever hear of any story like that?
Not like that. Not that particular one. And boy, that has to be unbelievably frightening to have something like that.
Will show up in your bedroom?
Definitely so. And I think there's some of our personalities, some of our energies that attract that.
Yeah.
I think if you believe, for instance, if you believe that somebody can put the evil eye on you, you kind of open yourself up to that possibility that somebody could look at you and curse you. So I think a lot of it has to do with our mindset. But I you know, if that's a true story, I feel horrific for them.
Mm.
And I do know there's a lot of stories out there where people would go out to try to find Mothman. Yeah. I talked with a gentleman. He works at the county level, and I'll not give a name, there in Mason County at Point Pleasant. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he said he was in grade school,
mm-hmm.
about, I think it was sixth grade, when the Mothman sightings began, when the first initial sighting began, and then of course the bridge collapsed 13 months later. But the little girl who would sit in front of him, he said, I remember after that bridge collapsed, she didn't come to school.
Oh no.
He said, then I found out that she was killed in that bridge collapse. So all of a sudden, that becomes very personal for me, because we were affected. We knew people in mm-hmm. town who died on that bridge. And I know of one woman in particular, she lost her husband and her son and that bridge collapse. Mm. And she just passed a few years ago. She had a business there in Point Pleasant. Mm. And I mean, that really brings it to you on a personal level. You might go into town just to talk to the locals about Mothman, and then you're sitting across the table from a woman who lost her husband and her son.
Yeah.
There's great superstition around that whole bridge collapse, because, you know, there were 13 trucks on the bridge when the bridge collapsed. Channel 13 News was the first to show up on scene to document that. And then I-bar number 13 on the bridge was the one that failed. So, of course, everybody's got these big conspiracy theories now with, you know, the number 13 was involved in it. Mothman was allegedly seen flying around the bridge. And, you know, I've heard rumors that some of the film crew started that back when they filmed Mothman. Although, you know, that wasn't really filmed in the town, but that was just something that somebody had said. And then, of course, urban legend takes over and you've got this something uttered. And then everybody's like, oh, no, but Mothman was seen. And you're like, oh, no, I heard it was a rumor.
Yes. And that is exactly what will happen too. The thing is when people are at a point of adding confusion to what was either, you know, it's like the, what do you call it? That tree, you know, you say one story and by the time it gets to the end of the 15th person, it's a completely new story. And of course, if you tell it and it sounds boring, you're going to add a few extra words to it to make it more colorful and more interesting. And, I mean, I'm surprised that, you know, someone did say they had tea with Mothman at one point, you know, right. I mean, just crazy stuff but you know, the thing is that something that cannot be denied, at least from my own thinking and opinion here, is that when you have so many people, you know, even tracking a cryptid of any sort, and many people don't see these things. That's why people are very suspicious about a lot of this, is if they don't have their own experience with it. This goes all the way back to the paranormal. This goes back to UFOs, everything. If you don't have an experience with it, people will say to you, well, I didn't have an experience with it, so it must not be true. No, it can be true. It just depends on who it decides to show itself to, or who decides what kind of energy, as you say. I'm giggling a little bit about the evil eye thing, because I was given the evil eye in Florence, Italy.
Of course.
Well, I was taking pictures. And we were on our way out as a tour group, and I turned around and I saw this gypsy standing in the middle of the street, and I thought, oh, she looks really interesting. I think I'm going to take a picture of her, because I'm also a professional photographer. So anything that, of course, I see an eye for, people will tell you, I'll go to the extreme of, you know, crawling under a chair if I had to get the right image and the right angle. Yeah, I know it's terrible, you know, but the thing is, it's what we do. But she was sitting in the middle of the street, and all of a sudden, I lifted up my camera, and I was going to take a picture of her, and she was giving me the, don't even think about it, don't even go there, don't even take, and then it came out, you know, just like slow motion, here comes those two fingers, just like this, you know, with her eye, right at me, and I said, you go ahead. I always describe it like a shootout in the Wild West. Here we are, walking up towards each other, and all of a sudden, she's raising up her fingers, and I'm raising my camera, and it's like, go ahead, and then I shoot, and there's her fingers, and all that. So then people were all, they'll always ask me, well, what happened? Supposedly you're supposed to have what, up to 7 years of terrible luck or bad luck?
Something like that. But I'm animated because the same thing happened to me.
It did it really? Where did it happen to you?
It did. And when you were saying that, I'm like, oh girl.
What were are we a twin or something? We must be.
Something, I don't know. I was in Tulum, Mexico.
Mexico.
Going to, yes, going to the, oh gosh, it was so beautiful there. But going to the ruins. Yeah. And there was a man there, local, of course, dressed in the whole just beautiful ceremonial outfit.
Right.
And he was doing a ceremonial dance. Yeah. And me, like you, I'm from a family of photographers.
Yeah.
My grandfather was a photographer in the army. My dad was a photographer. I stopped, backed the car up, tried to get the composition right, crawl underneath stuff, hang off of this, you know, to get the shot. And I'm like, oh, this is great. The sun's getting low in the sky. That it's beautiful. He's into his little ceremonial dance. Yeah. Yeah. Out comes my camera, you know, and then I get the glare.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, and I didn't take the picture because it was enough of a, and I'm like, ooh, okay. Shouldn't take a picture of that, apparently.
Oh my God. I'd be curious to see if something happened to you 7 years later, you know. You're probably wondering, did something happen to me? I lost my job a few times. I think I sprained my foot. I mean, I can't, all these things that I was like, I wanted to say to the woman, oh, bull harky, you know, you can't tell me that pointing those fingers at me and me taking a picture of you is going to cause me 7 years of bad luck. Well, I don't know. I don't know to this day if that was just the way my life went or if she had something to do with it. So I find that to be really funny, actually, Sherry. So
I have to tell you what happened after that.
Yeah, I want to know.
So we leave there. We visit the ruins.
Yep.
Absolutely amazing. We go back to the market downtown, and I'm carrying one of those big wicker purses like you buy. And it's a straw market. So I'm walking around looking at all this, and the end of my purse is sticking out, and it hits a relic.
Yeah.
The ones you can buy of the fertility goddess.
Yeah.
And she falls off the shelf and breaks her right breast off.
Oh, dear Lord.
So I'm chuckling because I'm like, of course, you know, I've got two kids already. I don't need any more kids.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about the female deity that fell at my feet.
Yeah.
And the shopkeeper come over and he's like, you buy. So to this day, I have the relic. Without the breast on it. I didn't feel the need to like glue it back on or anything, but it's got a story to it.
Sometimes when these things happen, a lot of times, I don't know, I am a superstitious person to a certain degree, because I always kind of, I'm ultra sensitive to everything, you know, my surroundings, this and that. And if there's a message that has to be given or whatever messages, I'm the first one online to sit here and go, yeah, let's not do too much mocking of that because we don't know what, if there's a message being given in that. How do you feel about, kind of when we're talking about messages here, how do you feel about the afterlife presenting messages in various ways? How do you feel about that? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's a positive thing when it happens, whether it's a message or a sign that you receive. I think that we just have to be open to it and realize, you know, some people would blow it off and say, oh, that's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
But I think there's not enough joy in life. And I think it would give us more joy and comfort if we would acknowledge these signs and these omens that are put in front of us, these messages.
Mm-hmm.
And just be accepting of it, because I do believe that our energy goes off and does something else. I do believe that we have past lives. I think we have soulmates. I think that those that have passed beyond try to reach out, whether it's through a dream or a vision, to give us messages, just to comfort us. You know, these spirit visitations that can happen while you're sleeping and you wake up and it's such a vivid dream that you remember every detail and you felt that person or smelled that person or, you know, you knew that you were with them. Those are true spirit visitations. And I think, you know, we're all energy beings. We've got the heartbeat, we've got the electrical stimulus in our body and, you know, following the laws of thermodynamics and physics, you know, that energy doesn't ever go away.
Yeah.
It just changes the shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
I think that leaves the possibility open. Then you throw in some quantum physics in there and everything else and parallel dimensions and a little bit of science. And yeah, I think that the signs are out there. I think that those messages are being given to us. I think we just have to open up ourselves and quit doubting. And when we hear that voice in our head or in our ear or sense that person next to us, I think we need to enjoy it and welcome it when it does happen, because life is negative enough. I think we need that extra comfort.
I hate to leave you hanging, but we are at time. So head on over to our final part, part 3, with Sherry Brake.